The prison is projected to incarcerate 5,160 inmates. The prison's going to create 1,600 new jobs. And of those 1,600 new jobs, the Department of Corrections projects that 72 of them will go to residents of Delano.
From the studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, it's time for the Weekly Freak Show. Headlines and highlights for the week ending Thursday, April 5th, 2001. My name's the V-Man, and I'll be your host for this half-hour look back at the news and features not heard in or glanced over by the corporate-controlled media. On this week's program, we'll hear a report on the lawsuit filed by Monsanto against Percy Schmeiser, a canola farmer from Canada. And later in the show, we'll hear about a prison slated for construction in Delano, California, and the suit to stop that project. Plus, this week's spotlight sound. Stand by for the Weekly Freak Show, coming up next. And now, headlines for the week ending Thursday, April 5th, 2001. The Animal Liberation Front, in an anonymous message, claimed responsibility for liberating 14 beagles from the controversial Huntington Life Sciences in East Millstone, New Jersey. Word was received the day before a major protest at the lab scheduled for Monday, April 2nd. No arrests have been made in that action. The raid occurred during a series of actions against the animal testing lab, which began at the residences of three HLS executives on Saturday, March 31st, and included an animal rights conference on Sunday. Huntington Life Sciences, a UK-based animal research laboratory specializing in toxicology testing, has become the target of an extensive campaign in England, and now in New Jersey, for its refusal to stop chemical experiments on live animals. Facing off against a SWAT team and approximately 50 police, four of the estimated 175 protesters were arrested and a half dozen more were pepper sprayed at Monday's demonstration to stop Huntington Life Sciences. One person was hospitalized in the melee. The four arrested activists appeared in court Tuesday and were later released. Actions were held worldwide on April 2nd in an effort to uncover the text of the Free Trade Area of the Americas Policy Agreement. In Boston, a series of banners were dropped from bridges along the Massachusetts Turnpike, while in Ottawa, Canada, about 70 of the 500 protesters there outside the Department of Foreign Affairs and International Trade were arrested after they symbolically scaled police barricades. Also Monday, the Pacific Stock Exchange in San Francisco was shut down as about 50 activists occupied the lobby. 11 were arrested, including two men who dressed up as Robin Hood and a Merry Man, unfurled anti-FTAA banners as they stood on a thin ledge above the lobby. Excessive force was reportedly used in at least two arrests, including that of a transgendered person. The Summit of the Americas will take place in Quebec City from April 20th through the 22nd to discuss the Free Trade Area of the Americas, and thousands will gather there and at the borders on those days to voice their opposition to the talks. Six female college students disrupted the opening session of a Sikorsky Corporation Suppliers Conference at the National Guard Memorial Building in Washington, D.C. on Monday, April 2nd. To protest the company's profit from the war in Colombia, the women locked their arms together inside pipes in the conference room. Last summer, the U.S. Congress approved a $1.3 billion aid package to Colombia. $221 million is going to Sikorsky for 30 Black Hawk helicopters. Sarah Saunders, one of the students, said, "Black Hawk helicopters will not bring peace and economic development to the Colombian people or end the supply of drugs in the U.S. Instead, helicopters will fuel Colombia's violent 40-year civil war." After Plan Colombia was written, the corporate lobbying of the Sikorsky Corporation, among others, drastically altered the aid package before it passed the U.S. Congress. "We are here to let the Sikorsky Corporation know that they cannot profit off war and the suffering of the people of Colombia without opposition," said protester Kate Barrigan. There is growing opposition in the U.S. to Plan Colombia and to military solutions to the drug trade. This independent action took place during a week of actions and lobbying in Washington, D.C., organized by School of the Americas Watch, to bring attention to Plan Colombia and the training of Latin American military personnel at the newly renamed School of the Americas. On Tuesday, April 3rd, the Copenhagen Anarchists Against Nuclear Power claimed responsibility for the early morning vandalism of the German embassy in Denmark. Slogans denouncing last week's nuclear waste transport were written on the building, and red and green paint bombs were hurled at its facade. And finally, on Thursday, April 5th, agents from the FBI, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and Oregon State Police conducted a six-hour raid of the home, business, and vehicles of three spokespersons for the North American Earth Liberation Front press office in Portland, in which they seized hundreds of items, including computing equipment, phone books, videos, literature, and other items. Craig Rosebraugh was served a subpoena to testify before a federal grand jury on April 18th that has convened in Eugene. It was the seventh time he has been subpoenaed since 1997 in relation to the activities of the underground ELF. The investigation is specifically about the fire which destroyed over 30 new SUVs at a car dealership in Eugene, which occurred in the early morning hours of Friday, March 30th. No one was injured in that blaze, which caused nearly $1 million in damage. The arson was claimed by an anonymous communique, which read in part, "We can no longer allow the rich to parade around in their armored existence, leaving a wasteland behind in their tire tracks." The communique received by the ELF press office on Saturday also made reference to Free and Critter, two young men accused of an arson 10 months ago at the same auto dealership. Free, who was set to begin trial this week, had the proceedings postponed after his attorneys filed a motion as the result of Friday's fire. Leslie Pickering of the ELF press office stated, "This by no way will have any negative impact on the work we do at the ELF press office. In fact, it has made us more determined than ever to promote and release information on the ideology of the Earth Liberation Front." And those were headlines for the week ending Thursday, April 5th, 2001. Last week, a Canadian judge ordered a farmer to pay the biotechnology giant Monsanto Corporation thousands of dollars because the company's genetically engineered canola plants were found growing on his field after pollen from modified plants had blown onto his property from nearby farms. The decision was a significant setback for farmers who fear they will be held liable if pollen from neighboring farms blows onto their fields. The case also highlights growing tension between farmers and large agricultural biotechnology companies whose high-tech crops are transforming the traditional ways growers tend their fields. While dozens of similar lawsuits have been filed against farmers around the United States, this closely watched case was the first to go to trial and clears the way for a $10 million lawsuit filed by Percy Schmeiser accusing Monsanto of libel, trespass, and contamination of his fields with Roundup Ready canola. Freak Radio's Skidmark Bob has more.
In 1996, Monsanto received regulatory approval to license genetically engineered canola in Canada, as well as an approval to license corn and soybeans in the United States. Farmers of these crops were assured by regulators that they would yield more at harvest and would be more nutritious. Farmers were also told that they could use less chemicals to grow their new crop.
We were using chemicals like they were coming out of our ears, both insecticides, pesticides, and herbicides. So when farmers heard that maybe they could cut down their costs by using a genetic altered canola, a lot of them went for it.
Percy Schmeiser had been growing canola for 50 years on his 1,400-acre farm in Bruno, Saskatchewan, Canada. In that time, he'd been known as a seed developer. That is to say, over all those years, he was continuously using his own seeds. In August of 1998, Monsanto filed a lawsuit against Schmeiser without any communications with him.
Initially in the lawsuit, they said that I had grown their seed illegally because I didn't have a license. Because to grow genetic altered canola, you have to have a license from Monsanto. And they also said that that I had infringed on their patent. So, and the patent was that they have a patent on this gene that they use or they put into canola to make it glyphosate resistant or Roundup Ready resistant. I didn't at first even know what they were talking about.
Schmeiser never signed an agreement with Monsanto, never attended any informational meetings that the company held on the new variety, and maintains that Monsanto's product contaminated his fields. However, many of the farmers in Canada did sign a contract with Monsanto and a contract with some stringent terms.
First of all, you're not allowed to use the seed the following year. Secondly, you had to pay a $15 an acre technology charge. Thirdly, if you committed an infraction or violated the contract, they could fine you. They didn't have to go to court. They could fine you. And whatever the settlement was, you were not allowed to tell anybody about it or they will fine you again. Fourthly, you had to sign a statement that you would allow Monsanto's police force. They have their own police force, and which are Royal Canadian Mounted Police, or and in the United States, I believe it was the Pinkerton Detective Agency, and in Canada, it's Robinson Investigation. So you would allow them to come on your land, with or without your permission, to go into your granaries, to go in your fields, and check if you were cheating on your contract.
The trial was heard June 5th through the 20th, 2000, in federal court in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. At trial, Monsanto never introduced any evidence indicating that Schmeiser stole their seed. Their claim was that it didn't matter how the genetically altered seed got there, that they had a patent on the product, and since Schmeiser had the product in his field, he had to pay the user fee. Schmeiser maintained through the trial that he didn't want their product in his fields and produce evidence that he did not take advantage of the technology as he did not spray his fields with Roundup. He also charged Monsanto with contaminating his canola seed that he had developed over 40 years of being a conventional canola grower.
When they sued me for infringing on their patent, I stood up to them and I said, I've been using my own seed. You, through cross-pollination, my neighbor had used genetic altered canola, and through wind, drift, and also cross-pollination, it got into my field. So right after the trial, the Monsanto's main lawyer said this, it matters not whether a farmer knows it or not, it's their property, and it doesn't matter how it gets into your field, they can take your crop, make you destroy your crop, or seize all the profits from your crop. That's what my case is about. So where are my property rights? My crop, which I developed as a canola grower for 50 years, has all been ruined because it was contaminated now with a genetic altered canola, which I didn't want. So where, as my rights as a farmer, my property rights were taken away by a multinational. If they can do that to me, or take my rights away, then what is stopping them from taking the rights of anybody away? So at the end of the day, what are they really after? They're after the total control of the seed supply. Because if they have control of the seed supply, they control the food supply. So it's just as simple as that.
On Thursday, March 29, 2001, the Federal Court of Canada issued a judgment in the case upholding the validity of Monsanto's patent gene, which it inserts into canola varieties to make them resistant to their herbicide Roundup. Judge Andrew McKay also dismissed Schmeiser's challenge to the patent based on the claim Monsanto could not control how the gene was dispersed through the countryside. In a key part of the ruling, the judge agreed that a farmer can generally own the seeds or plants grown in his land if they are blown in or carried there by pollen. But the judge says that it is not true in the case of genetically modified seed.
In Canada, we have a federal law that states that you can always use your seed. A farmer can always use his seed the following year. He may not sell it, be able to sell it to his neighbor if it's a licensed variety, but he can use it to replant. Monsanto's patent said, no, you can't do that. We have a patent on that, and you have to come back and buy seed from us each year. So this is where the property rights are. My property rights as a farmer to grow a crop from the seed I produced. Monsanto's intellectual property rights would say they put a gene into this seed, and you have to have a license from them. In Canada also, you cannot patent a seed or a plant, but you can patent a gene. Monsanto then says, when we put the gene into any life-giving form, we have created, we have invented that plant or seed.
The judge gave the lawyers 21 days to come up with the agreed-upon award figure. Monsanto was seeking $105,000. Schmeiser is considering an appeal and stated he would release his intentions shortly. Reporting for the Weekly Freak Show, this is Skidmark Bob.
Those polar bears now, who really cares now? They're breeding gender-bending babies who won't be breeding none, 'cause PCBs, yeah, are in the seas, yeah. We like to think that there's a little piece of us in everyone, 'cause we're Monsanto. That's right, Monsanto. We're turning Satan into Santa by giving kiddies cancer coming through now. We're changing you now, the Mother Nature Terminators of food and health and hope. That DDT man, don't let on me, man, 'cause we had all these creepy crawlies falling on the food we grew. Was a revolution, very solution. It's just a shame that what we sprayed on made the turnips toxic too. Let me remind you about Indochina. Them commie dominoes were falling, so they sprayed them into hell. Good peasant farmers, orange pajamas. We made their jungle cover wither, then we withered them as well. 'Cause we're Monsanto, that's right, Monsanto. We're turning Satan into Santa by giving kiddies cancer. Coming through now, we're changing you now. The Mother Nature Terminators of food and health and hope.
If not our fault, there's chemical warfare. But if there's dollars in dioxin, it's our duty to supply that grain of poison. They washed our boys in a cancer agent from the CIA. I cannot tell a lie. From Pentagon came that drug aspartame. Our Pepsi Cola with no calories was every kiddie's treat. When there were rumors, it gave them tumors. Somebody falsified the data, and we called it NutraSweet. And you get more juice now from a dairy moo cow. Monsanto's daily dose of hormones, then udder's gonna swell.
Don't blame the cream though, if you're in chemo.
There may be BST mastectomies, but nobody can tell. 'Cause we're Monsanto, that's right, Monsanto. We're turning Satan into Santa by giving kiddies cancer. Coming through now,
we're changing you now.
The Mother Nature Terminators of food and health and hope. Robert Shapiro, well, he's our hero. He's on a mission with a vision of sustainability, which means we're going to keep on growing till we're the biggest corporation in the 21st century. In the future, for the big polluters, he's fan and eco-friendly line and redesigning DNA. Genetic eyes on that far horizon, where everything alive is privatized and every seed will pay. We got the soya, we got the lawyers, the politicians in our pockets, all the way to president, the press and TV, to guarantee the cooperation of your nation in our new experiment. You did not choose it, but you'll have to use it. We'll get our Roundup Ready fingerprint in every pie you eat. With a big blatant, be a bit more blatant. Tell the corporation's domination of your global be complete. Mr. Monsanto, Monster Mutanto, we're turning Satan into Santa. Give everybody cancer coming through now.
We're changing you now.
The Mother Nature Terminators, hell on earth creators, gene manipulators, biotech dictators. The future's gonna hate us. Food and health and hope.
From the new and improved studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz, California, you're listening to the Weekly Freak Show on Berkeley Liberation Radio 104.1 FM. Please stay tuned for contact information at the end of this half-hour broadcast. We just heard the band Seize the Day with this week's Spotlight Sound. That was a track called Monsanto off their 1999 self-titled release. Situated 35 miles outside of Bakersfield, California, the town of Delano is the home of Cesar Chavez and the birthplace of the United Farm Workers. Delano is also home to a 1,000-bed community correctional facility and the 5,000-bed Kern County State Prison, constructed in 1990. The California Department of Corrections, or CDC, conducted an environmental impact report to build another 5,160-bed prison there in 1994, but the California legislature never funded the construction, and the project went nowhere. That is until May 1999, when Governor Gray Davis added $335 million to the state budget to complete the lockup facility. A 1996 report released by the CDC projected a statewide prison population of almost 290,000 inmates by the year 2005. Today, that projection is considerably less, at around 165,000. With the passage of California's Proposition 36 diverting nonviolent drug offenders to treatment programs and current estimates of 175,000 prison beds statewide, many people are asking themselves if this new prison is needed in Delano. Rose Braz is the regional director of Critical Resistance, whose mission is to build a national campaign to challenge the prison industrial complex. On July 10, 2000, Critical Resistance, along with other organizations across the state, sued the Department of Corrections to stop this prison.
The legislature set aside $2 million, $335 million to build the prison, another $300 million to service the debt on the prison, and $2 million to mitigate the impact of plopping down this huge city on already overcrowded schools in Delano. That's how much they've set aside for the schools, $2 million. So we have argued in our lawsuit that that number is inadequate. Several communities that have been fighting prisons, the way they've done it is they've asked the Department of Corrections for a lot more money.
In 1990, before construction of Delano's first 5,000-bed prison, the unemployment rate there was 26%. That rate is unchanged today. Yet, officials with the CDC claim that the new prison in Delano is necessary and will bring jobs to the community.
The prison is projected to incarcerate 5,160 inmates. The prison's going to create 1,600 new jobs. And of those 1,600 new jobs, the Department of Corrections projects that 72 of them will go to residents of Delano.
The lawsuit, which was scheduled to be heard in Bakersfield on Friday, April 6th at 8:30 a.m., is challenging the CDC on many environmental aspects of the maximum security prison, such as the effect on Delano's schools, water supply, air quality, and farmland.
The lawsuit we filed was under the California Environmental Quality Act. It's an environmental lawsuit. The California Environmental Quality Act defines the term environment really broadly. So it includes the impact of a project not only on the things you normally think about, like endangered species, and there are endangered species on this site in Delano, but not just those kinds of impacts, but also the impact of the project on the schools, for example. Delano's schools are hopelessly overcrowded. And so what is the impact of basically plopping down a city of 5,160 inmates plus 1,600 staff in the middle of this community of 30,000 people? This prison is slated to be on 480 acres of farmland of statewide importance. That's a category of farmland. And there's also something called the Williamson Act, which was created to protect farmland. This site also includes land subject to that act. So my point of all that is to say that this is farmland of significant importance. And this prison is going to take up 480 acres of it. It's working farmland, growing cotton, alfalfa. What about the people who work there now? You know, those are jobs that are going to be lost. And those jobs are most likely held by residents of Delano. Another thing you should know about it, besides the fact that it defines the term environment broadly, so we've been able to raise larger issues than just the impact on farmland, water quality, air pollution, all that stuff. The other thing you should know is it can be a very powerful tool. In fact, it was considered to be so powerful that the state legislature, when it built Wasco Avenal, it exempted those prisons from CEQA review. It told the Department of Corrections, you don't have to do an environmental impact report until after the prison is built.
Michelle Foy is with California Prison Focus, a prisoner advocacy group based in San Francisco.
She is hopeful that the lawsuit will slow down the construction of the Delano prison, which is slated to begin groundbreaking in May 2001.
If we're successful with that, then they will have to redo the environmental impact statement on the prison and open up the process, sort of have a whole public comment period and go through the process that is required with construction projects, you know, at this level. So that would push it back considerably, and that's what we're looking for. We see the lawsuit primarily as a means of, not of ultimately canceling the prison, but buying us time to work for people on the ground in Delano to come together in opposition, as many people are.
The state's legislative analyst's office reports that there are currently more than 4,000 inmates incarcerated at an annual cost of $100 million, now eligible for parole, but subject to the governor and board of prison terms' no parole policy. While almost half of the beds at the proposed lockup are set aside for youthful offenders convicted under Proposition 21, and with the state's prison population on the decline, it would seem that maybe there is another solution besides building a prison in Delano.
There are a number of things that we intuitively know work in terms of rehabilitation, but there hasn't been the kind of focus and resources put into things such as education. You know, I think when we're talking about the bulk of the prison system, 80 to 90% of people are in for largely nonviolent crimes or crimes that are also connected with drug addiction, which is treated as a criminal issue in this country rather than a health issue. And I think if we were to shift our thinking, then the bulk of people that are in prison could be redirected into treatment programs. In terms of violent crime, I think it's a tougher question, but it's one we have to tackle as well, trying to understand why people commit violent crimes and what's sort of at the root of it. And I don't think we can remove the issue of prison from larger issues in society and how also we can begin to look at those root issues and understand, you know, and work towards a better world generally. So I think, you know, it's tough, but again, as I said, there are some basic things that work. Maintaining a connection to family members is something that has proven to work well in terms of rehabilitation for prisoners, and that's something that the prison system, particularly in California, does everything they can to undermine. So some basic things that we can begin to implement if there's actually the will and the way to do it.
To find out more about the Delano 2 prison project, please call Critical Resistance at area code 510-444-0484. That's area code 510-444-0484, or on the web at criticalresistance.org. That's criticalresistance.org, and you can send email to critresist@aol.com. That's critresist@aol.com. And that's all the time we have this week. Thanks for listening. The Weekly Freak Show is produced live in the studios of Freak Radio 96.3 FM and can also be heard on more than 15 non-commercial, micro-powered, community, and web-based radio stations, including Radio Volta from the Philadelphia Independent Media Center on the web at radiovolta.org. The interviews featured in this program are only a sample of the fine shows each week on Freak Radio. To hear it all 24 hours a day, please visit our website for instructions on how to hear our live stream at www.microradio.net/FRSC. That's www.microradio.net/FRSC. For questions and comments, send email to FRSC@microradio.net. That's FRSC@microradio.net, or snail mail to P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California 95061. That's P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California 95061, or call us at area code 831-427-4523. That's 831-427-4523. Thanks to the A-Info's Radio Project for distribution. Our theme music was arranged and performed by Neil Norman and his Cosmic Orchestra. Recorded portions provided by C-Line. For Skidmark Bob and all the folks here at Freak Radio, my name's the V-Man.
And that's a wrap.